This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Adam Ritz, and you are on board with the famed Adam Ritz Show. It's one of the most popular public affairs radio show that you're listening to right now at the moment. And Jay Baker is joining me on the phone. He's one of my closest friends and radio mentors. I've been listening to him on the air for almost 40 years, if you can believe it. That means he got on the air when he was 5 years old. It's
yes.
Jay Baker.
It wasn't easy getting on that young, you know.
You're 45 now. You've been on the air 40 years.
And I was young enough that my parents had to drop me off at the station. So that's I'll hold to that.
Well, we like to take a fun look at public affairs and community service. And Jay, I thought I'd start with a story in the world of golf, since everybody's been talking, at least at the office here, we've all been talking about Happy Gilmore Part 2, the long-awaited sequel. 30-plus years we've been waiting for the sequel.
Wow, I know.
Actually, I think it was 29 years. I think the original came out, it was in 96, I want to say. So almost 30 years until the sequel. Did you see it?
Oh, yes. It was extraordinary. I'm kind of a big Adam Sandler fan. I know that he does great on some people's nerves, but I find him to be truly outstanding.
It was worth watching for our friends and listeners that haven't seen it yet. No spoilers. Don't want to ruin anything, but it is worth watching. And then if you want to, after you watch it, you can get in touch with us through social media if you want to discuss the film in further detail. I am at Adam Ritz on X and at Adam Ritz Show on Instagram. So we're talking golf, and this is, golf outing season. And a charity golf outing is a great way to raise money for your charity. It's a great way for you as a golfer or a giver to give money to charity. We've always talked on this program about how you can combine your entertainment dollar with your charitable donations and do something that you like to do for fun, and it raises money for a great cause. So if you haven't found a golf outing in your area this summer, maybe look to get involved with a foursome. Get three buddies together and chip in the money and have a great day of it. Lie to your boss, tell them you're sick, get out of work somehow, and go to a golf course near you and have a great day on the course and raise some money for charity. If you are planning a golf outing, Jay, I found some neat ways to make some extra money for your charity on the golf course during your golf outing. Now, I know you've done closest to the pin, putting contest, longest drive. Those are the ones that you can do during a golf outing. You can have, gift baskets donated to your cause by local companies. You can sell mulligans. I don't know when the last time you played a golf outing is, but it's always nice to have somebody in your foursome that has deep pockets that buys a couple hundred dollars worth of mulligans. That certainly helps your score.
Yes, it sure does. Anytime you can just exclude subpar performance, you're on the right track.
You know, I've always been in the foursome, though, that like we have three mulligans. That's it for the whole round, and you don't want to waste them. So we end up on the last hole. We get to 18, and we haven't used any mulligans yet, so we use them all on the last hole. Here are three ways, Jay, to make some extra money during your golf outing. There's something you can do called hire a pro, and that's where you take the country club's golf pro that is on staff. Every country club has a golf pro. And you stick him at a very difficult hole, the hardest hole on the course. And you, lease him out for a shot. So when a foursome approaches the hole, and let's say you've got a tough approach to the green, over water, sand traps everywhere, woods to the back of the green, and really only a pro could hit this green, that's where you hire a pro. And you come up with a dollar amount, $20, $50, whatever it is. You can hire that pro to take a shot for your foursome. and maybe he will land that ball right on the green for you. If you don't hire the pro, you're going to have maybe four shots in the drink. So hire a pro is a great way to get a couple extra bucks for your charity. Here's a fun one. I've never heard of this one until today. The longest marshmallow drive.
Oh, I have never heard of that.
I'm just letting that sink in with you because when I read that, the visual, the imagery, I'm like, okay, tee up a marshmallow just like a golf ball and then whack it with your Callaway, your Big Bertha. And I don't know how far you could drive a marshmallow. 10 yards? 20? I don't know how far.
What would be the estimated length from a guy that can hit pretty well? I don't know.
I know that if I
connected well, I'm guessing at best for me, a foot and a half.
Foot and a half? Far enough that you could still just reach out, not even move your feet, reach out, grab it, and eat it. You could do a longest marshmallow drive for an extra $10 entry fee or whatever and have a gift basket again donated to your group to give away to the winner. And then finally, I'll wrap up this segment with something they call the pink ball. And when you play a golf outing, you have four gentlemen or ladies or gentlemen, whatever. You have four golfers, I guess I should say, that take turns in a scramble. Everybody takes a tee shot. The best tee shot is where you go, and everybody takes a shot from that location. That's your second shot. The best of those four shots, and so on and so on and so on. And that's how you get a great low score with, you get to use the best of four shots. Well, with the pink ball, you have a player that uses a pink ball, and on every hole, you have to use the pink ball. And you must record the player's score with the pink ball. And then you add up that score as well as the scramble score. And the team with the lowest pink ball score also wins, which is not going to be, the lowest score of the day. I don't know if I explained that right, Jay, to be honest with you. But
it sounds complicated, but it adds an extra layer of fun to the game, undoubtedly.
I could sense that your eyes were crossing and that you were scratching your head.
I was just trying to figure out in my brain, okay, I'm so terrible at golf anyway. So what you're saying is I'm going to take a bunch of strokes and then I'm going to add my pink ball strokes to those. So that I can be truly embarrassed once I get back to the clubhouse.
Yes.
I kind of get what you're saying. Anytime you can add a wrinkle, the only thing that I would add to your thing is this is so traditional, but many people that put together these golf tournaments don't realize how much fun they can have. If you work with a local car dealer, I have found that whole – if you get a hole in one at this hole, you win this, whatever spectacular vehicle that's parked right here just off the green, because there are companies that insure those shots, meaning that the probability of you hitting is relatively low. So you might, as an organizer, only be out a couple $100 for insurance, but legitimately, if somebody in that tournament got a hole in one, they would win a new car. I have found, I don't know, there's something about putting a new car in front of people that just makes everyone go nicely crazy.
It is a nice visual. On a par three, you park the car right next to the tee box, and I've never had a hole in one. I've gotten close once, and this, I think if I cheated, I could say this was a hole in one, but if you get on the tee box and there's a car right next to you, you just honestly feel like you can make it. You're taking this car home. It's right next to you and you're one swing away. Jay, let me tell you about my hole in one I almost got. You ready?
Sure.
So I don't know if you know how the penalties work when you golf, but if you tee off and hit it into the water, then you can drop a ball on the tee box and hit again. That ball out in the fairway now, you're laying three. So your shot into the water is one. You pull it out of the water, you're laying two. So now your second tee shot, after you hit it into the water, you're laying two on the tee. And then you hit the ball, and now you're laying three.
Right.
So I am teeing off. I don't know. Let's just say it's 150-yard par three. I tee off. I hit it into the lake. So I tee off again. I'm laying two now because I have a penalty. I tee off again, and the ball goes in the hole. I get a hole in one. But it was a par because of my two-stroke penalty from hitting it in the water. So I only I got a three. So, you know, on one hand, I can be happy that I got a par, which is very rare in my world. I'm a pretty average golfer, but it's just bittersweet because it was a hole in one. That's as close as I've ever gotten, and I'd say the closest I've gotten beyond that is, you know, maybe 8 feet from the cup, 7 feet from the cup. So, and I've played enough golf in my life to know that it is a rare occurrence to get a hole in one. So when I hear one of my friends that plays less golf than me, that's not as good as me, has had two or three hole in ones, I just get so mad.
Some people have a knack for them, absolutely. Well, we have taken our hat off on more than one occasion for the band Metallica. Famously, this last summer, they have been doing great things with the American Red Cross. Well, they're teaming up again to help the Red Cross. The new Give Where You Live campaign will run now through February of 2026. Fans who sign up to give blood or platelets now through February 28th, 2026 website, redcrossblood.org/Metallica. So you got to go redcrossblood.org/Metallica. You'll receive the new limited edition Red Cross Metallica t-shirt while supplies last. These donors will also be entered to win a one-of-a-kind Red Cross and Metallica ESP Snakebite guitar autographed by all four members of the band.
Oh, my goodness. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, they are really putting it out there to sort of finish strong with their association with the Red Cross. So, you know, you always hear people, and summertime is the time that blood donations are most needed. So you actually could roll up your sleeve, help your community, and possibly win a one-of-a-kind auction item from Metallica.
Well, you had me at free Metallica Red Cross t-shirt, and then you throw in the autographed guitar, and it's like, whoa. So that's something to look into for sure.
That would be cool. This is an interesting stat. A third of Americans are now considered heavy AI users. A recent poll finds that one in three Americans now use AI every day or even multiple times a day. So, Adam, I'll have to ask you, do you find yourself utilizing AI?
Well, I don't know if this counts. I'm going to guess it does. And I'll give you the most topical recent example I can. I had gotten into a debate with one of our sales guys here at the radio station about the Toto Christopher Cross Men at Work tour that's happening this summer.
Right.
He and I were both going to this concert, and he mentioned to me that Christopher Cross was going to play first out of those three bands. That Christopher Cross was the opener, and then Men at Work would lead into the headliner, Toto. And I said that is completely wrong. There's no way that's happening. Men at Work has to be the opener, and then Christopher Cross, and then Toto. And we debated for a week on this, and he's texting me that overall sales, Men at Work has sold 30 million albums worldwide, and Christopher Cross has sold 20 million albums worldwide. So that's his evidence that he's right, that Christopher Cross would be first and open the thing, because he hasn't sold as many albums as Men at Work. And I came back and said, well, you've got to consider that Men at Work was part of the MTV explosion with Down right. Under and Who Can It Be Now on MTV, basically a free 3-minute commercial once an hour every day for a year. Whereas at the same time period, Christopher Cross, I don't think he ever even made a music video. In fact, in a recent documentary, Christopher Cross said the end of his popularity came in the mid to early 80s because of MTV, because of the visuals that he didn't have. He really didn't have any music videos. So anyway, the debate went on, and here's the long story short is that I went to the Google machine, and I asked Google, I guess it's Google AI. I said, who is performing first at the Toto concert tonight? And AI came back and told me that Men at Work was performing first, followed by Christopher Cross and then Toto. So that I think that counts, doesn't it, Jay, that I used AI?
Yeah, you did use AI, but you probably would not call yourself a frequent user of AI.
No.
Would that be accurate?
And, you know, in, if you dumb it down, I did just use Google. but I've noticed, like, I used to Google, a year ago, I would have just Googled Toto Christopher Cross. Those three words. I just would have Googled Toto Christopher Cross. And then I would have tried to find a link that was talking about the show and who was playing first. But if I've learned that if I actually write it in the form of a question, who is playing first tonight at the Toto Christopher Cross show, that you can see it populate, it's thinking, the screen is thinking, and then the answer comes out in, you know, almost and almost a narrative, like it's a paragraph, a narrative that
right.
They tell you tonight at the show. They almost answer your question with the question and then answer the question. So that is a little AI-ish. I don't think it's as AI as what you're talking about.
Well, you think 75%.
You know, I will, if I can just interrupt you one more time, Jay. Let me just interrupt you one last time and say that my AI use is as bad as my explanation of the pink ball at a golf tournament.
No, you're correct. It's just that it just shows you that, you know, it sort of just depends on where your comfort level is, because 75% of U.S. adults have interacted with AI in the last 6 months. About 16% of Americans are basically saying, hey, I don't have any interaction with AI at this time. People are using it much in the same way you just talked about. Searching the web using AI is about 30% of the usage of AI.
What
you said is a great example. People are sort of streamlining their searches because AI can look at more items that are pertinent to what you're asking in your search.
Now, does this count? When I go to Taco Bell and I stand there like a moron for 10 minutes and no one's at the counter to take my order, and I finally figure out that there's a smart screen kiosk behind me, and that's where I have to make my order, and I make my order on the touch screen. Does that count as a third of Americans using AI?
Yeah, a third of Americans are now going without their Taco Bell because they didn't see the kiosk. Well, I mean, it shows you, you know, I think the landscape is what I would call rapidly changing, wouldn't you?
It is, and it's scary. You know, I just saw Mike Rowe, famous for Dirty Jobs, on television, a news report this week, talking about how different the vocational landscape is changing because of AI. So I don't know what to tell. I'm glad I don't have I'm glad I'm not 15, and I'm glad my kids aren't 15 to tell them and advise them what to do with their lives, because there's no way to know what jobs are going to be swallowed up from this AI first revolution of an evolution of AI.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, and that is a concern. There was a big story in the news probably about a month ago about a number of universities that are accepting state money. You know, it's kind of obvious if you live in Kentucky, you know, the University of Kentucky, you're probably going, hey, that sounds like a state school to me. But many of the state schools have streamlined their criteria for their degree programs, because they realize that some of the degree paths that they have traditionally have offered for years and years may not be as valid a college degree as people think. And it was met with controversy because people were saying, look, if I want to get a philosophy degree, that's on me. But what the university was saying, we want to be careful with your money. I know you can't make everybody agree, but I think that's a step actually in the right direction.
I couldn't agree with you more. There's always been some, not necessarily useless degrees, but certainly some degrees that don't make it any easier to get a job. And now you throw in the worry of AI, and it's nice to hear that universities are taking some responsibility to save their potential customer, the student, some student debt. I mean, they realize that's been a big issue and a big problem the last couple of decades.
But yeah, and we'll be seeing more of that. And of course, with everything now, it's anything that's controversial. You and I laugh a little bit because it's like, can we not make everything a controversy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look, they have footlong hot dogs at the ballpark. Don't turn it into a controversy. Just order it or not.
Yeah. No protests.
You know how that goes.
No protest needed.
Well, let's get away from the controversy and help you sleep better. This may help you. Supposedly, showering about 1 to 2 hours before bedtime helps cool your core temperature, making it easier for you to fall asleep and stay asleep longer.
That is that must be why I feel so good today. I did take a shower right before I went to bed last night.
See, you are proving this research. And let's face it, some poor guy had to be there with a clipboard asking people about their shower habits. So there was a lot of work that was put into this study, but something that you might want to try. Nighttime showers may be your secret weapon for deeper, more efficient rest.
Now, didn't they, during the experiment, they had one group, group A, took a shower before they went to bed, and group B played a game of mud volleyball right before they went to bed. And it was no surprise who got the better night's sleep.
Yeah, the people that were climbed into bed with their muddy jersey. They didn't really get as much sleep as they thought they might.
Oh, I don't think I'd get any sleep if I went to bed with mud on my feet. I'd be hearing about it all night.
This show is emanating from the great Midwest, but heard throughout the United States, which is an honor and a privilege for us to help bring those messages. But, you know, we always hear of these municipalities where you can't believe the traffic here. Traditionally, not far from us, people always thought Chicago had amazingly bad traffic. Mm-hmm. But believe it or not, they didn't even make it into a list of the top 10 cities with the worst traffic in the United States. Consumer Affairs has an annual traffic ranking they release each year. It finds that this year, Washington, D.C. has basically taken over first place over Los Angeles as the city with the worst traffic. So officially, our nation's capital has the worst traffic.
That's that is believable, but I do find it super hard to believe that Chicago is not in the top 10. Really?
Yeah, I was a little surprised as well. To kind of give you an idea of where this yardstick sort of is cut, D.C. has the longest commute to work time in the country. The average is 33.4 minutes. So a lot of people listening to this show will say, but my, you know, trip into work, depending on where your residence and your primary place of employment is, maybe longer than 33 minutes. But when you factor in an average, because mm-hmm. we are talking about thousands of people traveling in rush hour in Washington, D.C.
And when you talk about that average commute, like I just think about the here at the studio, we've got about, I don't know, let's say there's 40 employees here. I would say 30 of them have a 10-minute or less drive.
Right.
Mine is about 18 minutes, so I don't feel like mm-hmm. that's too far off from 33. But, I mean, you've got people There's one gentleman here, our chief technical officer, lives across the street. So his commute, honest to God, he walks, and it takes him 45 seconds to get here. He lives in a townhouse across the street. So, you're talking about people that are driving an hour and a half to get to work. I know my daughter lives in Chicago. Her drive is an hour and 10 minutes to get to her
job. It can be quite lengthy. I think Chicago kind of stands out because it is very spread out, where the outlying suburbs versus the city core. But the official list, it's Washington, D.C., L.A., Miami, Florida, San Francisco, which I have always heard is a real bear, Atlanta, New York, Houston, Texas, Seattle, Baltimore, and San Jose, California, which a lot of people, quite frankly, think is pretty much a part of L.A. that may be a quibble, but they have tough traffic in many parts of Los Angeles.
San Jose is just outside of San Francisco, I think. But
Sure? I thought, well, anyway.
I only know that because an old radio pal of mine worked in San Jose, and he swore that he was on the air in San Francisco because it was part of San Francisco, and it really wasn't. So,
well, it's always hard to say. You know, it is funny when you look at, I believe that the county that San Francisco is in is called Marin County, and much of Marin County looks on a map to be very far away from the city of San Francisco. So, you know, it's all about geography. You know that.
You know, I've traveled to Manhattan. I cannot believe that New York is sixth. I would have thought that was definitely top three, if not number one.
I have always heard people say that traveling anywhere in the New York City metro, that you have to almost have like an instructor drive with you. Yeah. It's that difficult.
Now, do you think since 2020, work from home is such a big thing now, do you think that the average commutes are based on citizens that actually have to drive to work? Because they're not counting everybody. Meaning if out of 100, you know, workers, out of 100 citizens, if 30 of them work from home, their commute time is zero.
Yeah. There's a lot to factor in. I think what they're basically looking at is people that actually leave their residence for their primary workspace, and then they factor in what would be the average commute. I'm sure it's number of drivers over time, over, you know, distance.
What is your commute, Mr. Baker?
My commute time is about 23 minutes.
So that's better than D.C.
Yeah. So, and I have lived in areas before. For a brief time, got the opportunity to work in the city of Cincinnati, and my commute was probably close to 45 minutes, but that wasn't the average because most citizens of Cincinnati live much closer to city center than I did.
That's now, did you know where, when you worked in radio in Cincinnati, did you know where the radio station was before you got your residence? Because you could have.
I did, yeah.
Why didn't you move closer?
Well, it was kids' schools then, were. That was the overwhelming guiding principle on where we were going to live. Plus, I got to work in the morning, so there's something about driving the interstate in a major city where it's only you and about eight other cars. You know what I mean?
When you're driving,
it's a good feeling.
You're going to work at 4:45 in the morning. There's not much traffic. All right, Jay Baker, I appreciate the list and all your information. We had a great time today. I want to thank our listeners for joining us. Any comments or questions or concerns, you can email me anytime you want. It's adam@adamritzshow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit adamritzshow.com.